listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Today's program was brought to you by TechServe. www.techserve.com.
Hello and welcome to Why We Cook on the Heritage Radio Network. I am Chef Erica Wides from the Institute of Culinary Education. And I just want to let you know that now Why We Cook has a Facebook page. So if you have any questions or want to become a fan of the show, you can log on Facebook and just type in Why We Cook and check out the page. There are some interesting links. If you have any questions, comments, I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to have you as a fan. So this week on Why We Cook, I want to talk about sustainable summer shellfish. It's my alliteration title, Sustainable Summer Shellfish Show. And a little bit later on in the program, I will have a guest, and the guest is Bernie Wides, who also happens to be my father. And I have him on because he is involved in a project that is repopulating the Hudson River with oysters. Since we're talking about shellfish, I thought that would be a really good topic to talk about. They are involved in basically reseeding oysters into the Hudson to help clean up the water. So we'll be talking to him in the last segment of the show today. So this past weekend, I went out to Milan, Ohio, to a place called the Chef's Garden. And the Chef's Garden is a farm that grows very high-end organic microgreens, heirloom tomatoes, heirloom vegetables. Mostly they sell to chefs and to the industry. They do a little bit of retail, but primarily they sell to the restaurant industry, very high-end stuff. People like Charlie Trotter, Thomas Keller buy their product. And I've been involved with the Chef's Garden for a few years because they also have an educational branch to the farm called Veggie U. And Veggie U is a program that is designed to teach fourth grade children about the earth-to-table concept, teach them about healthy eating, about where vegetables come from. And it's a in-the-classroom package that school districts can purchase to teach fourth graders about growing their own vegetables. So the Chef's Garden every year has a big food and wine festival that I participate in. I have a station. It's the type of thing where people come and pay a lot of money to walk around and taste different food and different wine. And it's to raise money for Veggie U. And Veggie U is a great program. And if you're interested, you can look it up online. You can go to chefsgarden.com and check that out. And Veggie U is also looking for a big national sponsor to help them kind of push them over the hurdle, because they have a huge waiting list of school districts now that want the program, but they need sponsorship. And actually, Coca-Cola had offered sponsor, but they turned it down for obvious reasons. They don't want to be sponsored by a behemoth of non-sustainability like that. But anyway, while I was at the Food and Wine Festival, I had my station. I did a little Hudson Valley duck pastrami with kohlrabi radish slaw, some carrot mostarda, rye bread pudding. I thought it was really good. But I was walking around to some of the other chef stations when I had a minute, and I noticed that quite a few of them were serving tuna. And I was really surprised that out of about 30 chef stations, there were about four that were using tuna, raw bluefin or yellowfin tuna. And I was really surprised by that and really kind of appalled, because I was wondering why those chefs would make a conscious choice to serve tuna at an event that was focused on sustainability and produce and healthy eating, that they would buy this tuna and then ship it, first of all, to Ohio. Seemed a little bit contradictory to me. And then that they would serve something like tuna, which, if you're not aware of, is on the brink of collapse. The species have been fished to the brink, and we really shouldn't be eating them at all. And also, they're very high in mercury. So I was really, really surprised by that. And it made me really start thinking about why these chefs would choose to do that. I know they were looking for luxury proteins for the event, but that they really could have thought about using other things. And then I started thinking about fisheries management and sustainability in seafood and different choices we can make. And then I remembered that there was this article in the Times this summer about the lobster glut, that there's a surplus of lobster now, because the lobster fishery has been so well managed that there's now a surplus of lobster. So they're almost a victim of their own success. Between the success of the sustainability of the lobster fishery and the weak economy, nobody's buying lobster, so there's a big surplus. So that's a problem in itself, but it made me sort of think about the tuna and how they could have made other choices. And then I started thinking about how I used to work in a restaurant where I had lobster on my station and I had to grill it and how delicious that was, and made me think about grilling summer shellfish. I was at this event. We were all outside cooking, you know, summer on the brain. So I thought we would talk about grilling shellfish this week and about, you know, what a great way that is to use these proteins. And I also want to really emphasize the fact that when you buy seafood, when you purchase seafood, you should really make sure that you're only buying seafood that are sustainable and that come from species that are not being overfished. And a good way to find out about all of that is to go online. You can go to the Monterey Bay Aquarium's website. They have a seafood choices program, and that's seafoodwatch.org is theirs, and there's also another one called seafoodchoices.org, and they do a constantly updated list of species that are good choices, better alternatives, and ones that you should avoid. And they also have little wallet cards that you can send away for, so you can take them with you when you go out to eat. So I was thinking about this lobster on the grill that I used to have to do when I worked in my last restaurant job many years ago. And then I was thinking about these clams that I had eaten on that had been grilled when I was in Vietnam last month. If you listened last week, I was talking about my month I just spent working in Vietnam. And I thought, this is a perfect topic for the summer. It's midsummer. It's a great thing to talk about. And I've been wanting to have my dad on to talk about the oysters, so it all tied together. So when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about how to grill some of these things, how to grill lobster, how to grill soft-shell crabs, which are also one of my favorite proteins, and they're in season right now, along with clams and mussels, and which ones of those are good for using on the grill, which ones are better for chowder, for steaming, things like that. And then at the end, we'll have a little talk with my dad, who's Bernie Wides, who's working on the project to reestablish the oyster population in the Hudson. So we'll be back shortly on Why We Cook on the Heritage Radio Network.
Listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Today's program was brought to you by TechServe. www.techserve.com.
Welcome back to Why We Cook on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host, and you are probably listening to this live tonight, I hope. But if not, you can listen to these shows archived anytime on heritageradionetwork.com. Listen to them when you have some free time. So today's show is about grilling shellfish, summer shellfish on the grill. It's a great technique for cooking shellfish. You don't necessarily have to boil or steam like we're all used to doing. So let's talk a little bit about lobsters. In the first segment, I talked about how there's this lobster surplus now. There's a glut of lobsters out there. And part of that is because their fisheries are so well managed. And part of it is because the economy is so bad that nobody's buying them. And usually when there's a surplus, they get shipped to Canada and frozen to be sold off to places like Red Lobster. But now they're not even doing that because it's not economically feasible. So lobster is at an all-time low price. So if you're a lobster fan, now's a good time to go and buy some and cook it. So if you cook a lobster on the grill, it gets a really great kind of smoky quality and a really nice juiciness that matches well with the richness and the sweetness of the meat. And people may have never had it cooked this way. You're used to a lobster being boiled. But I think it's a really excellent way to cook. It works really well with the meat. And the best way, I think, to do it first, though, is to blanch or steam them just a little bit. You don't really want to take that live lobster and just put it on your hot grill. Imagine the consequences of that. The lobster would try to escape. It's not great. You could kill it first and then put it on the grill. But I think you should steam or blanch them first for about 5 minutes. Cook them in some boiling salted water or in some seawater, some clean seawater if you can get it, or steam them for about 5 minutes. And what that'll do is obviously it'll kill them, and then it'll firm the flesh up a little bit. What you want to do with a grill is really just add grill flavor and smoke and color to food. You don't necessarily want to use the grill to cook something all the way through. That way you also cut down on the amount of carcinogens that the grill produces. So grill them or steam them, and then split them lengthwise. Just take a knife and whack right down the middle so you cut the tail in half. Crack the claws a little bit to allow some heat in there, and then oil the cut side of the tail so that it doesn't stick. Put a meat side down on a hot grill for just a minute or two to get some color, get some flavor, and then flip them over. And then you have this open tail shell with a half a lobster tail sitting in it, and you can then drop some butter, some olive oil in there, some spices, some herbs, some garlic, whatever you want to flavor it with is great. You just drop it right in there, let that start to sizzle, and then it's done. What you want to be really careful about with shellfish is not to overcook, because they're very delicate little proteins. They don't have much fat. They're very tender. And very often lobster is overcooked. If you think about eating a lobster and you think about the tail, very often it's stringy and chewy. And it actually doesn't have to be. That's because it's overcooked. If you cook it a little more gently in a little less time, it'll be a lot nicer. So cook them until they're just opaque and they just pull away from the shells. That's what I say with all shellfish, scallops, everything, just till they're opaque. So that's a great way to cook your lobsters. And soft-shell crabs, too, are great that way. And soft-shell crabs, I just love. They're probably my favorite summer protein. Soft-shell crabs are blue crabs who have molted, which means they've shed their shell. They can't grow a bigger shell. So every time they outgrow their shell, they lose it. And then they basically excrete a new shell and it hardens up. But then there's like a 24-hour period before their shell hardens. And that's when they're caught and sold as soft shells. And you can eat the entire thing. And they're delicious. But when you buy them, you want to make sure you buy them still alive. Same with lobsters. All shellfish should be bought still alive. Once they start to die, their flesh starts to break down. Enzymes are secreted in their body and they start to disintegrate. So you always want them to be alive when you buy them. But when you buy the soft shell crabs still alive, they're not trimmed. So make sure they're alive, then have your fish guy, whoever's selling them to you, trim them. And this is a little barbaric, but trimming a soft-shell crab means you have to cut off its face. I know it sounds a little cruel, but you got to cut off the little eyes. Make sure they pull out the gills. You lift up the two flaps of the shell, pull out the gills, and pull off, it's called the apron underneath. It's a little tab of shell. You want to take that off because that stuff's not really edible. I mean, I suppose if you ate it, you'd be fine. You wouldn't die, but it's not really pleasant. So you take that stuff off. And then you just take that soft shell crab, brush it with some oil or some butter, put a little sea salt on it, and throw it on the grill and cook them until they just start to turn pink. The simpler, the better with this. Eat them whole. They're great. You just crunch on them whole. And along with maybe some corn, some tomatoes, it's really the best summer food you can buy. Then we get into things like mollusks, which are also excellent on the grill, something like mussels. Now, according to the Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Choices website, mussels are a best choice. If you're choosing shellfish, mussels are up there. They're a best choice. Lobsters are a good choice. Soft-shell crabs are a good choice. There are some mercury issues with them. We'll get into that some other time. But mussels are considered one of their best choices because almost all commercially sold mussels are farmed. And this kind of farming is good farming. Shellfish farming is good. It's not like some of the fin fish farming, which you may have heard about, which can be very polluting. Also, shellfish, when they're farmed, don't need to be fed. They don't get fed fish meal and fish oil, so there isn't any net protein depletion. And what I mean by that is, if you have a salmon farm, you have to feed the salmon other fish and fish meal, which means that other fish, small fish, have to be caught, ground up, turned into pellets, and fed to the salmon. So you're actually depleting the protein in the ocean to feed the salmon that you're farming. So it's not great. And there are some pollution issues and disease issues with fish farming, but shellfish farming isn't like that. It's actually very clean, and the shellfish are filter feeders, which means they suck in the water, they filter out the plankton as food, and then they clean the water in the process. So mussels are a great thing to buy. They clean the water, they're sustainable, they're healthy, they're good for you. And they're really easy to cook in the summer. They're really easy to cook all the time, but on the grill, they're great. You just give them a little scrub, and then you have to pull out their beard. Mussels have something called a beard. It's a little bit of fuzz that they use to attach to rocks. If you see a beard sticking out, yank it out with a pair of tweezers or pliers. Sometimes you won't see it. It's okay. Just throw them on the grill. And as soon as they start to pop open, take them off and pour the juice into a bowl and save the juice. You don't want those juices evaporating out on your grill. So save it. Pull off the top shell. So the mussels are just sitting in a little cup of a bottom shell. Put them back on the grill and throw on some fat. You want a little bit of butter or olive oil, bacon fat, a little pancetta, whatever you want on there. Throw them back on there another minute just until the mussels kind of contract a little bit. And then take them off and pour that extra juice over. And they're amazing like that. Remember, again, with shellfish, simple is best. Clams and oysters can also be cooked the same exact way. Put them on the grill, steam them open. They'll take a little bit longer. They have thicker shells. They're a little more stubborn. They take a while longer to cook. And if we're talking about clams, what we're really talking about are the smaller clams, like steamers or little necks, cherry stones. We're not talking about big surf clams. Surf clams are clams that are used, they're chopped up to make chowder, chowder clams. You wouldn't really cook those. What you want are the little ones, the ones that are just a bite or two. They're going to be more tender. Same idea, scrub them really well, because clams live down in the mud, whereas mussels live clinging to things in the water. So the shells of the clams are going to be pretty dirty. Give them a little scrub. Put them on the grill. Same idea, let them pop open. Pull them off, take off the top shell, pour out the juice, back on. Same thing, throw on some kind of fat is good on there, or just leave them as they are, some herbs. Last summer, I grilled some clams, and then I took them out of the shell. I put them on a pizza, and I put the pizza back on the grill. So I had a grilled clam pizza. It was great with a lot of really fresh herbs. It was really, really nice. It was great. Oysters are the same thing. Generally, we don't eat oysters in the summer. I'll get to that in the last segment when we talk about oysters. But grilled oysters are also great. You can steam them open the same way. They're really nice if you put a little butter. You could do a little Pernod, a little takeoff on oysters Rockefeller. Same idea, steam them open. Remember that oysters are very, very delicate little proteins. Generally, we like to eat them raw. But if you do cook them really gently, just until they firm up, just until they're opaque. And then there's my favorite, which is squid, which technically isn't a shellfish, but it's a great one to do on the grill. I think I'll probably do a whole show one day on squid and octopus. But squid is also great on the grill. And remember, with squid, the cooking time is either a minute or an hour. You either have to cook it really, really quickly and get it off, or you have to braise it really slowly for a long time. But it's really good on the grill. You just take the whole squid body, cut it open, flatten it out, make a few little kind of crosshatch marks on it, marinate it in something, a little soy sauce, sesame oil, sugar, throw it on the grill. A minute later, it's done. It's great. So that is a little lesson in how to grill shellfish this summer. Maybe you'll take the opportunity this weekend to do some of that. We're going to come back in our third segment and talk about oysters. We're going to talk about why oysters are a good choice, because, yet again, they're farmed like clams and mussels. And we'll also be talking to my guest, Bernie Wides, who is working on a project to reseed the Hudson River with oysters. So we'll be back in just a little bit.
Listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Today's program was brought to you by TechServe. www.techserve.com.
Welcome back to Why We Cook. I'm Erica Wides, chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education in New York, and we are broadcasting live today from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like what you hear on Why We Cook, you can check us out on Facebook. Just put in the words Why We Cook into Facebook and you'll find our fan page. If you have something to say, any comments, questions, I would love to hear from you. So far, I have 8 fans. I need more people. That's not enough. So in our final segment today, we're going to talk a little bit about oysters. We've been talking about summer shellfish. And my guest today is Bernie Wides, who, if you've noticed the similar last name, also happens to be my father. And we're going to talk a little bit about oysters. So welcome to the show, Bernie.
Thank you.
Dad. So tell us a little bit about the program that you're involved with in the Hudson.
Well, it's called the Oyster Gardening Project. Uh-huh. And it's sponsored by New York, New Jersey Baykeeper. They're baykeepers who work for the state of New Jersey and for the state of New York. And their job is to keep an eye on the bays and the whole Hudson estuary. Mm-hmm. So they are sponsoring it. The River Project, which is a small museum. Right now they're located on Pier 40 mm-hmm. in the Hudson. Uh-huh. They're waiting for a new building to be built, and hopefully someday they'll get their new quarters. And also the New York Harbor School, which is a high school that was previously located in Bushwick here.
Oh, right here.
But they are getting new quarters on Governor's Island. Mm-hmm. You know, Governor's Island is becoming this big, beautiful park. Some of it is federal, some of it state and New York City. And the Harbor School is getting the old Coast Guard station there.
Oh, great.
So they're going to have a great facility. They specialize in teaching about the environment, basically the estuary environment mm-hmm. at the school. So they are the sponsors.
Uh-huh. Okay, and how did the whole project come into being?
Okay, the whole project came into being because historically, the New York estuary, which is the Hudson River and all the bays around it, Jamaica Bay and Raritan Bay and Newark Bay and all that, were loaded with oysters. Mm-hmm. It was a main source of food supply in colonial days, and the oysters kept the river clean.
Right. New York used to be the big oyster, not the big apple.
Called the big oyster, right. And everybody ate oysters. They right. were very inexpensive.
Right.
And if you were a poor guy, you could go down to the bank, the edge those days, and dig up some oysters, and you had your dinner.
Right, and the saloons used to serve them with beer.
Right.
Like a dozen and for a dime or something.
Some of the first restaurants in New York City mm-hmm. were called oyster saloons or oyster bars.
Right.
And a lot of them were down on street level or below the street level. Mm. So they were very popular. And all the tourists that came to America had heard about New York oysters. They were famous in England and Europe and all that. And people would come to New York and say, we have to try the oysters. Mm-hmm. And they love them because they're really the best in the world. The French have oysters, but they're not the same.
Okay.
They're flat.
They're Belon oysters.
Belon
yeah.
oysters, right. That's because of the seaport where they catch them is called Belon, or the river on the French coast. But New York oysters are much better. Mm-hmm. But times have changed, and the oysters... Well, the waterways were polluted.
Yeah,
because
right.
years ago, all the sewage and waste and all that industrial stuff went into the estuary, and the waters became polluted, and it became dangerous to eat oysters.
Yeah.
And all shellfish.
Right.
So the project, the goal of this project is to reintroduce oysters into the Hudson estuary uh-huh. and establish reefs, because oysters love to grow very close to each other. So like you've heard of reefs in the tropics, well, oysters form reefs in temperate waters here. And what they do is they grow very close together, forming these big reefs of oysters. And when the oysters spawn, it's a perfect place because they spawn right there and settle down and join the crowd and make the reefs get bigger.
Hmm.
So the goal of this project is to grow as many oysters as we can and establish some oyster reefs back mm-hmm. in the river.
Mm-hmm.
They have started one now off Staten Island. There's an oyster reef, as well as they are growing clams also mm-hmm. off of Staten Island.
But the one you work on is off the 66th Street Pier,
yes.
right? Off the west side.
So we have 30 small oyster farms, which consist of a mesh cylinder about 2.5 feet long and about 8 inches in diameter. And the mesh is about a half inch mm-hmm. in the spaces in the mesh, so the oysters can't fall out,
right.
and most predators can't get in. And mine is located on the 79th Street Boat Basin,
oh, okay.
and it's been in the water since September.
Mm-hmm.
And originally, I had 600 baby oysters,
mm-hmm.
and when we first got the baby oysters, they were too small just to keep in this cylinder. Mm-hmm. So inside the cylinder, we put a mesh bag, and we had the 600 baby oysters in there. And at that time, they were about 3/4 of an inch long.
As babies.
That's as babies, uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, smaller than that, they're too soft and fragile.
Uh-huh. Too vulnerable.
Yeah. So the last time I checked them was last week, and we have some now that are 3 inches long.
Oh.
Which is pretty good.
They're growing.
Because commercial size, when they sell them, they're about 3 inches long. Mm-hmm. And it usually takes 2 to 3 years for them to get that long. So we have a whole range. There are 400 that are still alive out of the 600. And they range in sizes from an inch and a half, 2.5 inches. The average size is about 2.5 inches.
So is that a pretty good attrition rate that you have 400 out of 600? Is that what you expected, or did
We had no idea.
No idea.
No.
Yeah.
So there are 30 of these around the city, some in Manhattan, some in Queens, Staten Island, and in New Jersey. Uh-huh. Since it's a joint project with the state of New Jersey,
right.
We have some on the New Jersey shoreline, too.
Where do the baby oysters come from? Where do you get them?
Okay. We bought them from an oyster farm. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, clams are raised now, farming.
Aquaculture.
And mussels. Mm-hmm. Well, the same thing with oysters. Mm-hmm. And the most famous one nearby is the Flowers Company on Long Island, which is in Bayville. And Bayville is part of, believe it or not, Oyster Bay. So Oyster Bay is the only place left on Long Island where the water is clean enough to raise oysters.
Wow.
So if you buy oysters, you may get the Flowers Company oysters, and they use other names like Blue Point oysters, which traditionally was a big area on the South Shore.
South Shore. But isn't any Blue Point oyster just a Long Island oyster? Isn't that what it means?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right. It comes from Long Island. Mm-hmm. So they use the name Blue Point because it was a famous place. And they're trying to reintroduce oysters in Blue Point. They've just reintroduced clams, and maybe that'll be fine. Uh-huh. Because the water in the Great South Bay is pretty good now. Uh-huh. So that's the beginning of the project. Uh-huh. And they're establishing an oyster reef, believe it or not, in the Bronx. In the Bronx River, which flows into Long Island Sound, which has been cleaned up with another project. Uh-huh. And now they know that that river is getting better. You know, it's a little small river that feeds into the Sound, like the Hudson's a big river that feeds into it, because the first beaver has come back to the Bronx River.
That's a great sign.
And they gave him a name that he's Jose the Beaver.
Jose. You know what? We have a caller on the line.
Okay.
So just hold on just a second, and we're going to take this call. Hi, welcome to Why We Cook.
Hey, my name's Heather, and I'm from Long Island and very close to Oyster Bay, and I was just wondering, if they're farming oysters in Oyster Bay, why are they called Blue Point, or how do they have different names?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. I'm going to defer to my father on that one.
Okay, well, Blue Point was very famous years ago for oysters. They were some of the best. So the Flowers Company, I think, may be using that name, since they still come from Long Island. And if you live near Bayville, do you live near Bayville?
Well, I used to drive up to high school right around there every day.
Okay, you can go visit the Flowers Company. They'll give you a tour. And you can meet their hybrid oysters that they developed that come to maturity much faster than the old wild oysters. And it's a very big operation, and it's fascinating to see how they're growing the oysters from seed oysters, which are, when they're tiny, they're called seed oysters because they're so small, inside of seeds. And they grow them in big, big trays right in the bay. And then when they're big enough, they scoop them up and they put them on a boat and they distribute them in Oyster Bay. Hmm. So
I just wonder if I've ever seen this going on or anything like that, because, I mean, I used to jet ski out of there, and, you know, it's a very small little area right there in the Oyster Bay Cove.
Okay, it is, but if you know where the bridge is that goes over the bay there, right before the bridge, facing south on the right side, you'll see the sign that says Flower Company.
And very cool. I'll definitely check it out.
All right, good. Great. Well, thanks so much for calling, Heather. You're the first caller I've had so far on Why We Cook, so thanks.
Awesome. Well, this has been really informative, and I actually just got over my aversion of thinking I was allergic to shellfish, so I've been getting into eating oysters and lobsters and all that fun stuff.
Good.
So thanks for the info.
Okay, you can do it heartily and without guilt this summer. Yeah. Okay,
exactly.
Thanks for calling. All right. Bye.
Take care.
So now the whole idea behind this is to reintroduce the oysters as a species. Is it to reintroduce them as a food source or simply because they're so effective at cleaning the water?
Well, right now, I wouldn't advise eating any shellfish from the Hudson Estuary.
Yeah.
Or even finfish.
Yeah.
Unless they're small fish that only spend a short time there, because the waters still contain PCBs from up the river, and there were numerous paint factories years ago on the Jersey side. So there's still cadmium in the water, lead and titanium, and a lot of nasty stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are probably taken up by the shellfish.
Yeah.
So this is just to, if you get enough oysters in the river, it will help clean up the river.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so because the oysters are filter feeders, as Erica mentioned, Chef Erica mentioned before with the clams and the mussels.
Right.
And they just take in the water.
Mm-hmm.
They filter out the plankton, which are tiny little critters that are near the bottom of the food chain. And at the same time, they take in whatever is suspended in the water. So if there's...
They don't discriminate.
Yeah. No, they take everything in. If the particle is too big, they'll try to get rid of it.
Right.
And by the way, these are not the oysters that are used to farm for pearls. That's a different species
of
oyster.
Right.
A lot of people ask me that. Are you going to raise oysters?
No. Those are South pearls. Sea oysters, tropical, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And... Well, you may find a pearl-like thing in an oyster.
Right.
It's just unusual.
It's not going to be anything worse. Yeah.
And the old story about the sand grain is what forms the irritation in the oyster. That's not really true. It's usually a parasite, a little critter.
Oh, that
gets trapped in there, and then it develops. But in the commercial farming of pearls, they use a piece of a mussel shell.
Right. Like a little
freshwater mussel shell is inserted into the oyster.
Yeah, right. I remember when they did that show on pearls at the Museum of Natural History.
Right.
They had a whole exhibit on that, too. Great.
So to get back to the estuary, it's just to demonstrate that oysters will grow here again and that they're valuable in cleaning up. If you get a chance and you want to read a good book, Mark Kalansky's book on the big oyster, as New York was called.
Right.
And he says that in those days there were so many oysters in the river and in the bays that they filtered all of the water.
Mm.
Even though it's a tidal estuary and the tide comes in and out, but there were so many that they kept the river clean. So that's
wonderful.
Part of the project is to help clean up the estuary.
Uh-huh. That's great. So if people want more information or they want to get involved in the project, is there a website or something they can check out?
Yes. Okay. What you can do is you can contact the New York, New Jersey Baykeeper, the Oyster Program, and I'll give you the telephone numbers.
Okay.
It's in New Jersey, 732-888-9870.
Okay.
That's in New Jersey. Or in New York, you can contact, let's see, we'll give you the one from the Harbor School. The phone number is 718-381-7100, extension 5120. And if you call up the Harbor School, talk to Murray Fisher and send him my regards, because he's in charge of this program, I think.
He's appropriately named.
Yes, Fisher.
Murray
How's
Fisher,
that?
Yeah.
Yes, working at the Harvard School.
So he's the guy we should check out if people want to get involved in that. All right, great. Well, thanks for all the info. It sounds like a really great project. It's nice to know that all this stuff is happening to finally kind of clean up the river and get New York kind of back into the idea of producing some of our own food. We used to be a very agricultural region. And slowly, I think people are becoming reconnected with that. And that's also a big part of what we do here at Heritage Radio. And what I like to talk about on Why We Cook is reconnecting with our agricultural past and rediscovering foods that we can get very close to home. So that just about wraps it up for today on Why We Cook. Thanks so much for joining us. We were sponsored by TechServe, and I want to thank my producer, Lorenzo, and the engineer, EJ. And we'll see you next week.